ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। क्लैव्यं मास्म गमः पार्थ नैतत्त्वैरुपपद्यते क्षुद्रं हृदय दौर्बल्यं त्यक्त्योत्तिष्ठ परन्तप। वर्ड बाय वर्ड ट्रांसलेशन। क्लैव्यम इंपोर्टेंस, मास्म डू नॉट, गमः टेक टू, पार्थ ओ सन ऑफ पृथा, न नेवर, एतत दिस, त्वयि अन टू यू, उपपद्यते इज बेफिटिंग, क्षुद्रम पेटी पेटी, हृदय ऑफ द हार्ट, दौर्बल्यम वीकनेस, त्यक्त्वा गिविंग अप, उत्तिष्ठ गेट अप, परंतप ओ चेस्टाइजर ऑफ द एनिमीज। ट्रांसलेशन एंड पर्पर्ट बाय श्रील प्रभुपाद। ओ सना पृथा, do not yield to this degrading impotence. It does not become you. Give up such petty weakness of heart and arise, O chastiser of the enemy. Purport. Arjuna was addressed as the son of Pritha, who happened to be the sister of Krishna's father Vasudeva. Therefore, Arjuna had a blood relationship with Krishna. If the son of a Kshatriya declines to fight, he is a Kshatriya in name only. And if the son of a Brahmana acts impiously, he is a Brahmana in name only. Such Kshatriyas and Brahmanas are unworthy sons of their fathers. Therefore, Krishna did not want Arjuna to become an unworthy son of a Kshatriya. Arjuna was the most intimate friend of Krishna, and Krishna was directly guiding him on the chariot. But in spite of all these credits, if Arjuna abandoned the battle, he would be committing an infamous act. Therefore, Krishna said that such an attitude in Arjuna did not fit his personality. Arjuna might argue that he would give up the battle on the grounds of his magnanimous attitude for the most respectable Bhishma and his relatives. But Krishna considered that sort of magnanimity mere weakness of heart. Such false magnanimity was not approved by any authority. Therefore, such magnanimity or so-called non-violence should be given up by persons like Arjuna under the direct guidance of Krishna. Let us chant Mangalacharan prayers. Om Ajnanati Mirandasya Jnananjana Shalakaya Chakshurun Militam Yena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha. श्री चैतन्य मनोभीष्टं स्थापितं येन भूतले स्वयं रूपकदामहं ददाति स्वपदांतिकं वंदेहं श्रीगुरु श्रीयुत पदकमलं श्रीगुरुन् वैष्णवांश्च श्रीरूपं साग्रजातं सहगण रघुनाथान्वितं तं सजीवं साद्वैतं सावधूतं परिजन सहितं कृष्ण चैतन्य देवं श्री राधा कृष्ण पादान सहगण ललिता श्री विशाखान्वितांश्च हे कृष्ण करुणा सिंधु दीन बंधु जगतपते गोपेश गोपिका कांत राधा कांत नमोस्तुते तप्त कांचन गौरांगी राधे वृंदावनेश्वरी वृषभानुसुते देवी प्रणमामि हरि प्रिय वाञ्छाकल्पतरुभ्यश्च कृपा सिंधुभ्यैव च पतितानां पावनेभ्यो वैष्णवेभ्यो नमो नमः नमो विष्णुपादाय कृष्णपृष्ठाय भूतले श्रीमते भक्तिवेदांत स्वामीति नामिने नमस्ते सरस्वते देवे गौरवाणी प्रचारिणे निर्विशेष शून्यवादी पाश्चात्य देश तारिणे जय श्री कृष्ण चैतन्य प्रभो नित्यानंद श्री अद्वैत गदाधर श्रीवासदि गौर भक्त वृंद हरे कृष्णा 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 हरे 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 राम 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 हरे हरे। हरे कृष्णा। सो वी आर हियर डिस्कसिंग द सेकंड चैप्टर ऑफ भगवद गीता एंटाइटल्ड कंटेंट्स ऑफ द गीता समराइज्ड। दिस चैप्टर contains the basic understanding of spiritual life, starting from the difference of the body and the soul. This is the chapter where Krishna starts speaking. He speaks two verses here, second and third, and then after that Arjuna gives further arguments for not fighting the battle, and then after that Krishna starts imparting him the transcendental knowledge, starting with the understanding of the soul, and later on he continues describing the path of perfection, the symptoms of someone who is self-realized. This kind of this chapter summarizes the whole purpose of Bhagavad Gita. That's why it's aptly entitled Contents of the Gita Summarized. We have heard in the first chapter that Arjuna gives many arguments for not fighting the battle. And then here, when he finally gives up, and he puts down his bow and arrow and sits down, then Krishna here speaks two verses. In the last verse, that is the first time it is said, Sri Bhagavan Uvacha. That's the first time Krishna is speaking here. And everywhere we see anyone else is speaking, then the name of the person comes. Like Sanjaya Uvacha, Dhritarashtra Uvacha, Arjuna Uvacha, in Bhagavatam, Shuka Uvacha, and Rishi Uvacha, Kunti Uvacha, everybody's name comes. But when Krishna speaks, it's always Sri Bhagavan Uvacha. It's not Krishna Uvacha. Because we have to understand that Krishna is Bhagavan. Bhagavan means Krishna. Krishnastu Bhagavan Swayam. And in the purport of this second verse, Srila Prabhupada explains at length this particular thing, Sri Bhagavan Uvacha. Why it is Bhagavan? Because many people who have studied Bhagavad Gita and have also written commentaries on Bhagavad Gita, many of them treat Krishna as some great personality, very powerful personality, but not as supreme personality of Godhead. And that is something Srila Prabhupada always wanted to clarify. And that is the reason when this International Society for Krishna Consciousness was to be established, and then many of them proposed to have International Society for God Consciousness. Because people don't know Krishna, maybe if we put God Consciousness, more people may accept. And Prabhupada said, no, it is Krishna Consciousness because I want to teach them Krishna is God. So he put Krishna Consciousness. So this is the essence to understand ultimately out of Bhagavad Gita by hearing all this and learning all this. If someone does not understand that Krishna is Bhagavan, then that understanding is not perfect. It's incomplete or incorrect. So, in the previous verse, the Supreme Personality of Godhead said, "My dear Arjuna, how have these impurities come upon you? They are not at all befitting a man who knows the value of life. They lead not to higher planets, but to infamy." The arguments we saw that Arjuna gave were even like no one today's world, and nobody will give that kind of argument. They're very profound and based on scriptures. Out of compassion, out of considering that the whole Varnashram system will be broken if in the fight all the elderly people are killed, there will be nobody to protect the women and the children who will be born. They will be Varna Sankara, the whole Kul Dharma, Jati Dharma, Varnashram Dharma, everything will be devastated, and that will lead to complete chaos in the society. And it will be very sinful to do all these things. He gave such kind of arguments, but Krishna is considering them as impurities. In the very first instruction, he did not praise or he did not glorify or even appreciate that you have thought so much before fighting. The only reason for that is the platform on which Arjuna was speaking was on the worldly platform. And also, in the world, that's very high level, what Arjuna said. But from Krishna's point of view, where Krishna is in control of everything, if someone looks from that angle and acts as an instrument of Krishna, then those things are considered as impurities. Krishna wanted Arjuna to be just an instrument in the part of Krishna's plan, that Krishna already had a plan to be fulfilled. So he wanted Arjuna to be just follow that. So he speaks very strongly here in these two verses. And then here he says that Klaibhyam ma sma gamah partha. Do not yield to this degrading importance, Partha, O son of Pritha. He addresses Arjuna by two names here in this verse. What are those two names? Pritha and Parantapa. Arjuna has got many names. And we will many of the names are there in Bhagavad Gita. Partha is O son of Pritha. Pritha is another name of Kunti Devi. And here it is written that who happened to be the sister of Krishna's father, Vasudeva. So Krishna and Arjuna, they had family relationship also. So how come Kunti is the sister of Vasudeva? We have heard that Kunti's father is Kunti Bhoj. And Vasudev's father is Shursen, Krishna's grandfather. So what happened is, Shursen had Vasudeva's son and had other children also, and Kunti was also born from Shursen. But this other king, Kunti Bhoj, he did not have any children. So he had begged for this Kunti, the Pritha, and adopted her. So Shursen gave Kunti to Kunti Bhoj. So Kunti name came later from Kunti Bhoj, earlier name is Pritha. So he gave Pritha to her. In those days this system was there. And then he raised Pritha as her, as his own daughter, with all the love and affection in a very nice way. And that is how the Krishna and Kunti, they are related, and therefore Arjuna too. Arjuna was born from Indradev when Kunti was given this benediction to chant certain mantras to invite any demigod. So when in the forest Pandu was cursed and they needed children, then Kunti, having this benediction, she prayed for Lord Indra, and who gave and blessed Kunti with a son. So that is why Arjuna is the son of Indradev as well as Pandu and Kunti Devi. So why Krishna is referring to Arjuna as son of Pritha? Just reminding him that look at your great dynasty in which you belong to, so you must act according to that. And also, he is telling, you are a Kshatriya. Kshatriya means you must act according to the principles of Kshatriya. If some ordinary person says that yes, these things are so and so and so, that may be fine, but not for you. You have a great duty to protect and to uphold the principles of Dharma. You cannot run away from here. At the same time, he is also addressing Arjuna as Parantapa. Parantapa means, oh, chastiser of the enemy. Means he's telling Arjuna that you are not a weak person, you are capable of defeating enemies. That's the meaning of Parantapa. If you are incapable and running away, okay, because you can't do anything, then there's no other alternative. You are capable, then why are you running away? It's like this, that if someone is capable of protecting the citizens and does not perform his duty, then that is adharma. It's a higher principle. There are, religion has got many levels. At one level, whatever argument Arjuna gave is fine. But then another level, when one acts from another higher level, then they will not be considered. Then a higher principle applies. So that is why there are many levels of religions. We all have got many duties in life. But for a higher purpose, the lower purpose can be compromised. So, just like we know that for family, we can sacrifice ourselves. For the society, we can sacrifice the family. And for the country, one can sacrifice even one's local society. A village can be sacrificed for the sake of the country. So for a higher cause, the lower things can be sacrificed or compromised for a higher purpose. So in this case, Krishna is addressing Arjuna as Partha as well as Parantapa to remind him that you belong to a great dynasty, and also you are capable of chastising the enemies, so you must fight. He's encouraging Arjuna. He's not putting him down. Krishna is a very perfect, we can say, perfect guide that Arjuna has. At the right time, he is chastising also, at the same time, encouraging also. He is saying, Tyakto uttishtha parantapa. You get up, and you are capable of fighting. He is not saying that you can't do, you are weak, you are this and that, I brought you here, all this, and now you are doing this. So, there is a contrast in Mahabharata where Shalya was the chariot driver of Karna. After Bhishma and Drona both died, then, died means defeated basically, Bhishma was still alive at that time, but on the bed of arrows. Then Karna was made the Senapati, the commander-in-chief. And then he wanted Shalya to be the driver, chariot driver. He said that Arjuna, my opponent, has a very great chariot driver as Krishna. I also need a great person as a chariot driver. So he requested Shalya to become chariot driver. Shalya accepted, but what Shalya was doing was always discouraging Karna. He would say, you see Arjuna, he is so great, how can you ever defeat him? How can you ever fight with him? He would say, don't you remember the Virat Yudha? You were defeated by Arjuna, the same Arjuna. You were defeated. How can you ever stand in front of him? So in this way, he was weakening him. So the same the chariot driver who is going to drive me, and he speaks like this. How was Karna going to fight? Karna was very powerful. But then because of his bad association with Duryodhan, that was the only thing that Karna made a mistake. Otherwise he had many great qualities. But this one mistake that he made, and that destroyed everything. So Shalya always had a heart for the Pandavas, out of compulsion, because he was cheated by Duryodhana to be on his side. And he finally fought on Duryodhana's side, and after Karna died, then Shalya was made the commander-in-chief. And he also fought and he was killed. And Duryodhana was so, he was having such a great hope that even Shalya could help him win the battle. It is said in Mahabharata that Gate Bhishme Gate Drone Karne Cha Vinipatake Asha Balavati Rajan Shalyo Jashati Pandava. Bhishma is gone, Drona is gone, Karna is gone. Asha Balavati Rajan, still he has hope. The hope is so strong that Shalya Jashati Pandava, because Shalya will win over the Pandavas. So he was made, but he finally was killed, and then finally Duryodhana fought with Bhima, and that we all know the Mahabharata. So the point is that Karna, having Shalya in the form of chariot driver, who was always discouraging. We see in whole Bhagavad Gita, we never find Krishna at any point discouraging Arjuna. He chastises, scolds, but he is always encouraging. You will find uttishtha, get up. You are capable of doing it. You are a great warrior. You belong to this dynasty. You are a kshatriya. So these are the positive, encouraging words that Arjuna needed, which Krishna gave. So he is encouraging him. He is saying that such petty weakness of heart, you give up. What is all this you are talking about? Because the kshatriyas, they have a duty when a kshatriya, for the sake of protecting dharma, kills someone, there is no sin. That is the principle of dharma. Just like even today, we see our army kills so many people, but they are never punished. Rather, they get awarded because they are acting for the sake of country. Not they are not killing for their own satisfaction or for their own purpose. Similarly, when great kshatriyas like Arjuna or the kings, they will punish someone who is a criminal or for not following dharma, that actually benefits that person. Because someone who engages in adharmic activities or irreligious activities, if he does not get punishment from the king, then he will have to suffer in hell, or he will have to get those sufferings in the next life. So it's good on the part of the king or the kshatriyas to actually give that punishment so that he is relieved from all those sufferings. And next life he can get a better place to go. Otherwise he will have to, because law of karma is so perfect that no one can escape. It's not that if somehow in this life a person commits a sinful activity and he escapes from the current law of the government, he will be freed. It's not. Law of dharma will always capture him at some point, either in this life or in the next life. So it is better if he gets that punishment in this life by the king. So that way the king is also protected, because if king does not punish, then actually king suffers that reaction also. So that person will suffer anyway for his own, but king also failed in his duty, so he will also suffer. But if king gives that punishment properly, provided of course the king has to be just, always was in those cases, like these persons, Yudhishthir Maharaj, Parikshit Maharaj, they were very powerful and they were protector of dharma. So when they gave punishment to anyone for any misdeed, that person was also benefited and the king is also benefited for executing his duties properly. So nowadays this whole principle of non-violence and people also propagate this concept of no capital punishment. In many countries, capital punishment is banned. And all these modern concepts, they are actually never there as eternal principles. Violence is always necessary in executing in the duty of a kshatriya. It's always there. Nowadays, people do horrible things and they can very easily escape from the grip of the law, because laws are so weak. And even if someone commits something, it takes years and years in the court, from this court to that court, and then just goes on. And finally, many a times they will be just put in jail for a few years and then go out. This happens. But in those days things were very clear. Parikshit Maharaj, we hear from in Srimad Bhagavatam, in the end, first canto, that the kings would go in the country and wherever they find anyone who is not acting according to the principles of religion, they will punish him then and there. We hear in Bhagavatam that Parikshit Maharaj went, and then there was one person who was about to kill a cow. He immediately took out his sword and he was ready to kill that person. But then that person surrendered to Maharaj Parikshit and begged for mercy. So Maharaj Parikshit, and that person turned out to be the Kali personified. And then Maharaj Parikshit asked him that, because you have surrendered, I forgive you, but you cannot live in my country. So he banished him. You have to go out of my country. That's how powerful they were. So we must understand that this Arjuna, the kind of social environment and the whole scenario in that time was very different than today. And these kings like Arjuna, they were very powerful, very powerful. they had full control and fearless. So that is why here Srila Prabhupada writes in the purport that when Kshatriyas and Brahmanas, they are unworthy sons of their fathers if they do not act. If a Kshatriya declines to fight, then what kind of Kshatriya he is? Kshatriya means he has to fight. Brahmana must live a life of piety. If there is a Brahmana who is engaged in smoking and drinking and so many other things, what kind of... Today we have so many so-called Brahmanas who do all these things. That is not Brahmanas. Brahmana is one who knows who is Brahman and lives a life according to that. Piety is the symbol of a Brahmana. Must live a very pure life, pious life. That is Brahmana. Free from sins. They are always careful. Live a very simple, pious life. That is Brahmana. It's known by that, not by birth. So these are the symptoms of Brahmanas and Kshatriyas. And that's all part of Varnashram Dharma, which is the basis of any civilized society. A civilized society must have this Varnashram Dharma properly in place. Otherwise, the society will be a chaos without Varnashram Dharma. And today that is being seen because of the bad state of Varnashram Dharma. The four orders are there, but they don't follow their prescribed duties. Neither Brahmanas follow their prescribed duties, nor Kshatriyas, nor Vaishyas, nor Shudras. There are prescribed duties for all four orders. When they follow that properly, then everyone is benefited and everyone has the opportunity to practice devotional service by keeping Varnashram system as the foundation. And then practice devotional service and go back to Godhead. All classes of people could perfect their life. It was not that only Brahmanas can go back to Godhead. Brahmanas, Kshatriyas, Vaishyas, Shudras, all four. And we have examples of all in Mahabharata, Ramayana, and all this we can see. This verse here, this the two verses Krishna speaks, second and third, and then after that Arjuna starts to give further arguments for not fighting. Oh, they are my grandfathers, they are worthy of my worship, and how can I fight? And then a few more. And then finally, Krishna starts giving the basic instructions, starting because unless the understanding of soul and the body, that is clear and common, two people will be talking at two different levels. Krishna is talking at that level, Arjuna is talking at the worldly level. So that mismatch is there, so Arjuna will not get that instruction. And that's what happens many a times. We talk to people because if we talk from a different platform, and that person does not have this basic understanding of the difference between the body and soul, he will not get it. He will argue in so many ways, why this is like this, which is right, that is right. What is the point of talking all that if the common level, the common understanding is not there? The common platform is required. And that is why we see Srila Prabhupada in every lecture, anywhere he goes, he always talks about the difference between the body and soul. You are not this body. You are spirit soul. You are different from this body. The law of reincarnation, the principle of reincarnation, how the body, dehinos manyatha dehe kaumaram yavanam jara, how you as a person have lived in this body which has changed from boyhood to youth to the adult and then old. But you are the same person. He will emphasize, because without that understanding, explaining the higher principles of who is Krishna, this is Krishna's pastimes, he did this, people will argue, oh, Krishna did this right, Krishna did this wrong, but there is no point explaining them or justifying them, Krishna, this is right or wrong or this and that, because the platform is different. They are talking from a completely different platform, and but those pastimes need to be understood from a different platform. It's a spiritual platform. Without having come to a certain level, one cannot understand those pastimes. So the difference between the body and soul is very important. That is the ABC of a spiritual life. So Krishna starts from the basics. First he tries to say, why, what you are talking about, all this is useless, you are a kshatriya, you must fight. But it did not affect Arjuna. He goes on and gives further arguments. So then Krishna realizes, okay. And finally surrenders also. Finally Krishna, Arjuna is completely undecided and he surrenders to Krishna. Shishyaste aham shadhi mam tvam prapannam, please instruct me, I am your disciple. Then Krishna starts from the basics of spiritual life, and then he takes it forward from there. So this is the basic principle to understand that we are not this body, we are souls, we are eternal, we are part and parcel of Krishna, and we can never be happy in this material world unless we go back to our source. Mamaivansho jiva loke jiva bhutah sanatana. So unless we go back to our source and get connected to where we belong to, there's no way we can really be happy and peaceful in this material world. So that's the summary of this particular verse here. Now this is second chapter of Bhagavad Gita. In many scriptures, there are glories of these verses. In Padma Puran, there is a glory of chanting, reciting and understanding the second chapter which is mentioned, where Lord Vishnu is explaining it to Devi Lakshmi, the glory of the second chapter. So I will briefly tell that story. So once there was a brahmana in a village near Pandharpur in Maharashtra. His name was Devashyam. And he was very pious, but he was not very peaceful. He would serve many sadhus, whoever came to him, or passing in that forest where he lived, that village, nearby village. And everyone who he would meet, he would ask, please tell me, what is the perfection of life? How can I be peaceful and happy? And different people would instruct him in different ways. Once he saw a yogi in that forest who was doing, was meditating basically, but appeared very peaceful. So he went and served him and then begged from him to tell him the path of attaining such peace as he had. So that yogi directed him to another place and another person. His name is Mitravan. That you please go there and meet this person and he can help you in this path. So as directed by that yogi, this Devashyam, he went to the other village and met this person, Mitravan. And he went, offered obeisances to him and inquired from him that, please instruct me, what is the perfection of life? And how can I attain peace and be happy? So Mitra once said, okay, I will tell you something that I experienced myself some time back. So Mitravan told that long ago, in this forest where you are now, I was traveling and I met and I saw, he told that I had many goats and I used to take them for grazing in the forest. And once when I was herding them, I saw a tiger come, and then out of fear, all these goats, they started running here and there. They were very scared by looking at the tiger from a distance, and I also saw that tiger and I also ran away and hid myself behind a tree and started to watch. And I found that finally that tiger came across one of my goats face to face. And it looked as though he's just going to pound on him and then just eat it, finish it. But when the two came close to each other, they immediately stopped. The tiger also stopped and became very calm and peaceful. And the goat also became fearless. Didn't try to run away. And having noticed that, the tiger asked this to the goat while this Mitrakam was watching from behind the tree, that how come I am feeling completely satisfied and I am not having any desire to attack you, which I would do usually. And I am very surprised at that. Why this change happened in me, the tiger is thinking. And he's asking this to the goat. Oh no, the goat asked this to the tiger. The goat asked first to the tiger that, you see, your nature to attack animals like me, goat, and kill, but why you are not doing it? I am very surprised. And tiger also told that, yes, I am very confused. I don't understand why this change happened. And now I am not feeling hungry and thirsty. Rather, I am feeling very peaceful and satisfied. And that is why I am not doing it. But I don't know why this change happened. But I am also surprised that why you are not running away from me. That change happened in me. But then you should run away. Because now I am not attacking. So you should try to run away and save your life. Because otherwise you will be killed. You should have that fear. The goat said, same with me. I am also not feeling fear of you anymore. And I am very peaceful. So they too were confused. And then they thought, let's go and talk to this man who is there. The goat knew where the man is because the man was the master of the goat. So, okay, let's go and find out from this person, Mitravan. So they came to this person. They asked him, he also didn't know. Then they saw that there was a monkey on the top of that tree, old monkey. So they said, let's go and ask that monkey. So they went and asked that monkey. The monkey said, yes, I know why this happened. And I will tell you the reason. And he told that long ago, there was a person in that forest. His name was Sukam. He was living there and he was searching for, he was very, pious, following the principles of Dharma and doing his sadhana very nicely. He wanted to attain perfection and the shelter at the lotus feet of Krishna, devotion to Krishna. So, once a sage came there and he asked him to guide him how to attain the devotional service to Krishna. So that says, went to the temple near that place. So there was a temple of Lord Shiva. He took him there, and there on stones he wrote the complete second chapter of Bhagavad Gita. And he told him that you should recite this every day. You should read this every day. And this Sukam, he started doing that. And by doing that every day, he became so happy. And he developed pure devotion for Krishna. And also his hunger and thirst, everything was gone. And the influence was so much that the whole area around that temple became so calm and peaceful that anyone who would come in that place, he will also be freed from the hunger and thirst and any kind of material desires. This is such a strong influence of that place. A place has got a very strong influence. So that was the reason. So that's the glory of the second chapter of Bhagavad Gita. Anyone who reads the whole chapter or recites the whole chapter, tries to understand it with full faith, this will lead to the development of consciousness and lead to the pure devotional service to Krishna. See, the influence of the place is something that we all can understand even today. See, so many people all across the world, they come here to Vrindavan. And they come and they have darshan in the temple here, kirtan. They get a different experience. Different experience. This is the effect of the place. That experience they will not get anywhere else. The dham and at the same time kirtan going on and the beautiful darshan of the deities has got its own influence. So anywhere the kirtan is chanted, devotees live, the whole atmosphere is surcharged, even though it may not be explainable in any material way. What kind of chemicals are there in the atmosphere which can impact and all those things. But it's a spiritual change that happens. It touches the soul. It's very different. Not even that, when we come across a great saintly person, who is very pure in heart, when you associate with that person for some time, we get a different experience ourselves. We feel some advancement in our consciousness. Desires change, thoughts change, the lower desires, they subside. The higher desires to practice bhakti, that develops. This is all the influence. It's all a spiritual influence which cannot be explained in any material way. So similarly, in those days, many places where these pure devotees lived, the atmosphere will be surcharged with those vibrations and that place becomes very potent. And anyone who comes in contact with that place will experience that potency. So this is how glorious these verses of Bhagavad Gita are, because they have been spoken from the mouth of Lord Himself. They are not ordinary words. When Krishna speaks something, that has all the potency built in it. So, we should recite these verses. That's why in our Srila Prabhupada has established this system of chanting the shlokas at the start of every class. We chant the shlokas a few times, the speaker chants and then the audience they chant, because we want to hear those verses directly as Krishna has spoken. They have their own benefit. On certain times, like especially on Gita Jayanti day, we all chant the whole Bhagavad Gita in 3 hours, three to four hours. And otherwise also we should chant at our homes whenever possible. Just chanting those shlokas, they are very powerful. So with this we pray to the Lord that He blesses us so that we can understand and practice His teachings and attain His lotus feet. श्रीमद् भगवद गीता की जय, श्री प्रभुपाद की जय, हरे कृष्ण। एनी वन हैज एनी क्वेश्चंस और कमेंट्स? यस ब्रो। देयर इज माइक्रोफोन वी कैन यूज।
शैलिया टूक द दुर्योधन साइड।
या
तो दुर्योधन हैज चीटेड। व्हाट वाज द रीजन?
ओह, बिकॉज़ ही गेव द वर्ड। In those days, the question is why Shalya took the side of Duryodhan even though he was cheated. Because in those days, see, people, when they gave word to someone, they followed it. So what happened is, Duryodhan was very clever when Shalya was coming to the battlefield. He offered hospitality. And in a nice way, he arranged everything for his army, food and water and everything, gave him a nice place to stay. And finally, Shalya offered that, oh, I am so pleased with your service, you can ask some benediction from me. So you can ask something. He said, okay, well, please fight on my side. he would not have expected that Duryodhan will ask this. But he asked, and then he gave the word, so he fought.
You said probably if any army person kills some civilian, he is not punished by the government. But how the law of karma will be punished by Dharmaraj or Yamaraj?
Who?
The army person killed on his duty.
Yes.
Some civilian, you say he will not be punished by the government.
Uh-huh.
So how about the Dharmaraj government?
Oh, no, he will not be punished by Dharmaraj also, because he is doing his duty. That is his duty to kill there. Army person cannot go at the border and say, oh, how can I kill? That is his duty. He is doing his duty. So he will not be punished. Of course, if he kills unjustly, like an army person, he comes in the country and somewhere, I am an army person, he starts firing, that is not correct. But when he has been ordered to fight by his authorities, like by the king, and he fights and kills, then he is doing his duty, he is doing his dharma. There is no question of punishment there.
So law of karma doesn't apply?
Law of karma is positive for him there. He will be positively benefited by killing, because he is doing his duty. Killing as such is not something we should not say that, oh, killing is always wrong. Killing unjustly is wrong. If a king kills someone, he will never be, because he is doing it for protecting dharma, for doing his duty, then that killing is according to dharma. So he will get the benefit of dharma, according to the law of karma.
Suppose some dictator is there, he tells the army to kill the army of other people. So will you think that...
Okay, so then, see, that is different. When we are talking about a proper government, which is acting according to principles of dharma, and that person kills in order to protect for a good reason, then that person will be rewarded for that. But a dictator is doing out of his purpose is to fulfill his own desires. He is not doing for the protection of dharma, rather he is doing for the protection, satisfying his own material desires, or for his own ego. Then he will suffer, and all those who are following him will also suffer. That is a different case. But here I am talking about a government which is acting according to the principles of dharma. So there is a difference between the two. Well, it's like this. We can say, if we can't just say it is there or it is not there, there are different levels and different degrees. So like say, if today the country is there, our country, if another country attacks, then our army fights and kills the soldiers of the other country. And there is nothing wrong in that. they have to do their duty. So that is according to dharma, we would say. But if suppose somebody out of no reason, suppose our prime minister or president, out of no reason, they just say, oh, attack the other army, other country, and just try to kill them. There is no reason to do that. They are not attacking us. Still we just go and try to do that. That is to fulfill selfish desires. If someone is attacking, and then we have to protect ourselves. So then that time it is proper. I mean, very simple thing you can understand. Of course, nothing is perfect in this world. But there are certain basic principles which we can understand. If someone attacks us, then in our protection we have to protect, and then the army will take those steps. Yeah.